Hello, I'm Julie Stanford and welcome once again to Essential Business Radio. With me this time to talk about marketing your business are two experts, Dee Blick, award-winning author and owner of The Marketing Gym, and Natalie Page, the founder and owner of Page Marketing. I'll start with you, Dee. You're known as someone with a passion for practical marketing. What does that mean for your clients?
I think for me it's about skipping all the textbook theory that you get in the real thick academic tomes and getting to grips with really who do you want to communicate with, why, and what are the messages that you should take to your market so you can get the sales up and running as quick as possible.
So it's the kind of ideas that a business can pick up quickly and actually apply in the real world.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Natalie, over to you. Tell us what sort of businesses you like to work with.
For me, it really doesn't matter what they do as a business. That's completely irrelevant. It could be a widget, it could be underwear, it could be anything. It's actually about the mental attitude of the owner of the business. It's what I get passionate about. If they're passionate about their business, then I'll get passionate about it as well. And I just know that the two of us will just work together so, so well to really drive them forward.
So for you, it's the person rather than what they're actually doing in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. 'Cause people often say to me, you know, have you worked in my industry before? Do you know about this? And it's like, well, actually, it doesn't really matter what you do as a business, because marketing is so transferable. The skills are so transferable. And it's actually about, as I say, it's more about the mental attitude and drive and passion, I think, and doing things in a certain way.
So the skills,
than actually what you do.
They apply across all businesses.
Oh, they really do, from the big boys down to the small fish. I've worked in huge corporations and it's exactly the same, but just slightly different budget, than, you know, your local shopkeeper. So it's just interpreting it, really.
It's encouraging that it's transferable. So now I've asked you today because we all know that marketing is crucial in a business, absolutely crucial, but that not everyone gets it right. And I think from experience and from people who I speak to, researching a market is a big challenge. So Dee, I'm going to ask you first of all, if you don't mind, why would a business need to research their market? What's the point? Why?
I think on a practical level, it's one, going to save them huge amounts of time. Two, it's going to save them huge amounts of money, because invariably most businesses think everybody's a potential customer when in fact it's normally a very narrow group of people that are potential customers for them. So if they can do a little bit of research, it enables them to target almost from the word go and to get the messages right. So research should always be fundamentally practical, finding out what makes people buy, getting a handle on what your competitors are doing so you can learn from them, as well as decide what you're going to emulate and what you'll take no notice of. But you need to start off on the right footing. And I've worked with businesses where they've dived in, they've assumed that what they've got is unique, only to find out several months down the line that it ain't unique and they've got to start again. And it's simply because they did not do some basic research either of their competitors or of the people that they were looking to buy or influence the decision to buy.
That reminds me, a number of years ago I knew a very enthusiastic young man who was about to launch a club for gay men in Brighton, and he was a fabulous idea, I have to say.
Yes.
It was a really great idea, but he didn't research the market, and the day before he launched he noticed that coming into the city was an exact copy of the club he was looking to launch, and it just broke my heart, because I thought if he'd have just looked and investigated, he'd have known that. So, Natalie, what do you think? Do you think your clients understand the value of research?
My clients definitely yes, because I'll have drummed it into them. but other people know. I mean, I get a lot of work from a manufacturing company. They have people come along to them, inventors, very much in a dragon's den kind of way. You know, they've got a great idea and they've taken their savings or mortgaged their house and they've gone to the effort of getting something tooled up and getting some samples made. And then they come to me ready for their marketing and it's just way too late, because they've not done any research. Someone's already out there. They're far too late. You know, there's not enough pre-planning involved, and they're so convinced, like you say, that no one else could possibly have had the same idea, when actually in practicality probably someone has. So it's definitely worth doing your research, you know, making sure there's not already a patent out there, etc. So talk to the professionals early rather than late, I think is definitely what I'd say.
So Dee, then, if I come to you and I say, look, I've got this idea, or I'm up and running within a particular sector, because it does apply when you're up
yes.
and running just equally, What do I do first? What's the first thing as a professional?
I think, well, probably if I give you a few practical examples always makes it more credible and believable for any business owner. If we look at one aspect, which is why do people buy the product or service that I'm looking to market? That's a pivotal question to ask, is why and how do they buy? And I had to answer this question a couple of weeks ago that I was taken on by the MD of sells air suspension in the UK with a remit to market to motorhome owners. Now, I didn't have a clue how motorhome owners buy air suspension, why they buy it. So what I did, which is what any of your listeners can do, I simply arranged a day when I hopped down to a caravan park in Eastbourne and I spent the entire day interviewing motorhome owners about why they buy air suspension, what the problems are without it, what their needs are. I also, most importantly, wanted to find out what's the decision-making unit, and every one of your listeners must try and find that out. Who's involved in that decision to buy? In this case, it was the man and the woman. The guy did the driving. In every case with the motorhome owners, it was the guy that was driving, but the woman was influential in the decision to buy. So that's an important thing that you can do, is why do people buy it? What's the deep underlying need? And you don't need to pay a market research agency to do that. The other thing, briefly, is I was doing the same with a brand new business and a brand new product, online credit management, and we discovered that picking up the phone and talking to these guys, they did not want to share any information about their credit management, so we learned that we had to try a different way of marketing to them.
It is, I think, the thing that puts people off, Natalie, I don't know if you found this with your clients, is people get frightened. They don't know how to do it, and the idea of picking up the phone, of even going to their potential customers, feels really scary. Do your clients feel that fear, or am I just saying that people feel that, because I felt it?
I think, well, certainly picking up the phone to a lot of people, it always fills them with dread, and also they don't necessarily want to hear what might come back.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. They don't want someone to say, oh, that's a terrible idea. What the hell do you think you're doing? So there is that fear involved. But also, a lot of the time I find with business owners is ego is involved. And that's the reason that they don't really want to ask anyone else. It's because they've got their idea. They think it's really good. And they're almost, well, why do I need to ask anyone else? Of course it's brilliant. Mm. And it's like, well, no, that it might be brilliant for you. And if there was a million yous out there, then that might be fine. But everyone is different. And you might need to just take into consideration what other people want. And that can be quite tricky sometimes.
It's interesting, because I think that's when you grow up as a business person, when you learn it's not about what you want, it's about what your customer wants and they're willing to pay. You know, in other words, how can you delight them? Because if you don't delight them, they're not going to part with their money. And it really, you do feel as if you've matured when you finally realise that.
And I think people are so involved in their business as well that they need to actually step back and realise it is a business. It's so personal to them that they almost can't see the wood for the trees, and they must step back and treat it as what it is and go and do some market research.
Mm. Have you found that problem with your clients, that they resist that?
No, I haven't. I think, just thinking as well about what we're talking about, the phone, not all research has to be done on the phone. For example, when I wanted to do some research about franchising, so I got involved in franchising several years ago, I simply hopped on a train to the NEC and spent 2 days trawling around all the franchisers' stalls to find out how they marketed to potential franchisees. So not everything is about the phone. You can do surveys, you can do face-to-face. I've done little focus groups where I've got 3 or 4 potential clients into a room, fed them some food and just said, look, we'd love to be able to market our products and services to you, but tell us the right way to go about this. And you know what I do find is people are invariably willing to help. The minute you say, can you help, rather than saying, can we sell to you? Mm. And so I don't think it's as onerous. I think we make these things big in our minds. So if you don't like the phone, have a little focus group. Look at the trade shows.
The thing is, though, you know, taking devil's advocate position here, you're both marketing professionals. You're trained. You've got that confidence of the questions that you should be asking. But the poor, hapless business owner, very often, they don't have your knowledge or your expertise. And so what tips could you give them? Just thinking about the tools, first of all. So you've mentioned surveys, phone calls. Natalie, what else would you use with your clients?
Well, there's two different ways you can do market research. You can go and ask people, or you can actually use existing data as well. Someone else might have done some of the legwork for you, which can be nice, but it depends very much what your industry is in, if you're coming up with something new or if it's existing. So you can find information on the internet, etc., that's already out there. So it's a mixture, really.
Is that secondary research? Is that what that's called?
Primary and secondary.
Primary and secondary research. I knew I'd heard those words bandied about.
I know. I never worry about the terms, but yeah. So some people, they can have it sort of good to go, or maybe if you've inherited a business, it might come with some data for you. You know, don't forget the power of looking through your own data as well. Mm. A lot of people forget that they've got so much knowledge at their fingertips in their own database, which is crazy. So research your own data before you even collect more.
Would you say that ages quickly, though? There is a possibility that you're relying on someone else. Mm. Isn't that, Dee? What would you think?
Well, if I could just come back to a point that Natalie was making, there are two very... You said about business owners being a little bit worried, and I can really understand that if they don't have the confidence of a marketer. There's two things they can do that cost nothing. They can use the InfoTrace, InfoTrace, InfoTrace service that's available through the libraries, which gives them normally up to an hour of free market research. So you go to the nice guy or the gal in the library and say, this is the market I'm looking to do some research in. How can you help me? And they will actually physically do some research for you. So if you want to find out how big's my market, what type of demand is there. The second thing is, and what I've found exactly referring back to the point you made of confidence, there are a heck of a lot of students that are more than happy on work placements to do little market research projects. So I arranged this in Hurst Pierpoint for a small business where the owner himself felt very reluctant to pick up the phone. But two students from Brighton University were fantastic. They did a little bit of work placement. So there's always avenues to explore. I think the critical thing is to be willing to do it and get out your comfort zone a little bit, which we all have to do.
It's true. And don't forget, if you have a question about anything in the show, you can email me at askjulie@essentialbusinessradio.co.uk and I will find the great expert who will answer it for you. So, Natalie, I want the other thing that people say to me is they struggle with knowing what questions to ask. Mm-hmm. Now, how on earth do you know what to ask your potential clients or customers to get the right answer for it to be useful for the business?
Now this, it can be a minefield because I've had situations where market research has worked well and where it hasn't worked well. For example, one client, she had run a focus group before and for one reason or another, they came to some decisions on her branding and wording to be used and etc. But actually, what they ended up with was very, very bland. So it wasn't what she was hoping it would bring her. It was nice and it was good and it was balanced, but you've got to remember, if you're going to get together a group of people, are they the right people? Who are you choosing? You're just choosing friends and family. Are they going to give you a balanced point of view? Or should you try and get in more of a variety? You might need to obviously do a bit of pre-planning in with regards to, well, if you know that, for example, you're definitely targeting a certain sex or age, then make sure you get the right people in front of you. Mm. But with regards to questions, I mean, one client of mine, we've worked for years and we research everything, but it's proved so valuable. But we've learned as we've gone along. You know, we've got feedback on some questions and actually thought that hasn't quite told us what we were looking for. So the next time we changed it slightly. So don't be afraid to change a questionnaire or change what you're doing if it's not getting you quite the result you need. But you've got to start somewhere. So yeah. I think just give it a go, check it over maybe with a few people, get an idea of how the questions are working, and then maybe go out there with a bit more force.
So check and review and adjust as you go along.
Oh, God, isn't that just marketing?
So, Dee Blick, what would you say about that before we round up on this part of what tools to use?
Because I think we've got to keep it really simple. There are key things. Why do they? You've got to find out about your audience. Why do they buy? How do they buy? What do they buy? When do they buy? And you've also got to find out what is really important to them. So when I did this a couple of years ago with a business, his assumption was that price was everything. What we found was out of 10 things that we asked, is potential clients. What really matters to you with this particular product? That price actually came quite a way down the pecking order. So keep it really simple. You just want to know what's really important to you when you're buying this product. I think as well, taking the marketer out of it, there's two areas of research I get involved in. One is called qualitative, and that's when you're just listening to what people are saying. So in that motorhome park, all I did all day was take notes. The other is quantitative. That's where you get your stats, and you know how many people you're interviewing, and you're getting specific about, you know, 75% said they buy it for this reason. But as a small business owner, I think we've got to keep this dead simple. A lot of it is based on gut feeling, that you speak to a good handful of potential clients or actual clients, if it's existing clients you want to talk to, and just try and get answers to those key questions.
Okay.
That will help you to either improve what you're offering or to shape your initial offering.
Excellent. So you're listening to Essential Business Radio, ready to fit your business day. Choose a quick expert tip or a more in-depth discussion, which is what we're in the middle of right now. Natalie Page, Page Marketing, just tell me now then. We've talked about researching clients, researching potential customers. There's one other group of people we need to research as well with these same tools, I'm assuming, and that's competitors. We have to find out who else is doing what we think we're going to make a fortune doing in the market. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, competitors is a tricky one, because what I don't like is when people look too hard at their competitors, in that it actually makes them follow the herd, follow the pack. They sort of look at what someone else is doing and then they sort of go into line with them rather than think about excelling and going past and leading the way. So I try not to encourage too much analysis of competitors, but obviously, like you say, you want to know who else is out there and what else they're doing and what their price points are, etc. But another type of research which is really important is sometimes you've got to remember that your customers aren't necessarily the end user. We do a lot of research for one of my clients with their retailers. So we make sure we're always asking the retailers for feedback from the customers, because they're more in front of the customers than we are. So don't necessarily just think of the end person. Think about those in the intermediary, because they can give you some really valuable advice and information as well.
I remember when I first published my Essential Business Guide that I had done this book, which the readers loved, and then I discovered that all that one very large book retailer was interested in was how many that would fit on a pallet. That's all they cared about. They needed to make sure it fitted on a pallet, and you would think I would have known that, but I didn't. So I had to go to the bottom of the marketing class that day. So Dee, yes, you look like you're itching to say something.
No, I was agreeing with what Natalie was saying. I think what I would also add is that it's good to have a look at what competitors are doing, because it really does stop your ego from running riot. Because a lot of small business owners can think what I've got is unique, and invariably you talk to them and find out it's not unique. They don't have to be unique to be successful, but presenting yourself as our unique selling point is this, when in fact there are a gallon of other competitors that are doing very similar or the same, is disingenuous. They shouldn't do it. But I think it's just about really trying to get your feel for where you stand in your marketplace relative to your competitors. And how do you do it? Again, going back to the library, the free market research service, getting on the internet, Googling, looking at websites, trying to get a feel for where am I the same, where am I better, does it matter? It's just to get a real feel. Can I be inspired by what this person is doing? Can I have a healthy respect? Perhaps we could work. They look like they're pretty big. I get a lot of marketers that contact me wanting smaller projects that I wouldn't handle, that I would happily hand to them. So I'm not a competitor. I'm actually a source of business to them, ironically.
Well, competitors are potential partners, aren't they?
Most definitely.
Yeah,
most
if they definitely do something. That, as you say, I mean, I did that when I ran a graphic design agency. I made a point of getting to know, when I grew up a bit, I made a point of getting to know other designers so that I could hand off work that I couldn't cover. And I made a bit of a markup, which the designers knew about, and everyone was happy and my client was delighted, because it meant I could always deliver. So, but now people talk a lot about mystery shopping, and I think it makes a lot of business owners' blood run cold when you talk about that. The thought of ringing up and trying to find out from a competitor what they're doing. Do you mind giving me a few tips about mystery shopping? What do you think about that, Dee?
I think it's important. I think it's really important. And for you to do it yourself as the business owner can really stretch the bounds of credibility, because you start to ask questions that reveal a degree of insight that you really wouldn't be possessing if you were an ordinary customer. But I think what I do normally when I do any mystery shopping, you've got a list of reasonable questions that you can ask a competitor, and it might be a friend or a member of the family, but you've got to prime them up and really think about what realistically can I ask this person that still keeps me being a professional. I don't want to find out everything that my competitor does. I would feel really unethical if I started to go too much under the radar. So just find out what the simple things that I need to find out. You know, is it their delivery times? Is it their product range? Is it their response to queries? Just what are the basic, maybe 4 or 5 simple things that you can find out? But again, my view is very much like Natalie's. You've really got to plough your own furrow and have that confidence in your own capability without spending all your time looking over your shoulder at what competitors are doing.
Although, yes, I can see that that's true, but I do think a small amount of knowledge about what's going on in your sector, because it also, when a client comes to you, it shows that you've got your finger on the pulse of the sector as well. You're not just doing it in a vacuum, doesn't it, Natalie?
It does. I think certainly things are changing, though. It used to be very much everyone kept themselves and secret, but now with things like Twitter, nothing's really held back. Everyone knows everything, and everything's shared a lot more easily. It depends what, obviously, industry you're in, because certainly some industries, such as a state agency, for example. I used to work at a large company that dealt with mainly estate agents, and some of the stories we used to hear about what estate agents would do to each other was quite horrific. They used to glue each other's mailboxes shut and crazy things. So for some industries, I know it's a bit more sort of bitter. But mainly, I think, exactly as Dee said, you don't want to be cloak and dagger about it. You want to find out some basic information. But at the end of the day, you've got to have some morals about it, I think, if you're going to be happy with what you're doing. And I know a lot of my clients, they're very much, well, you know, I don't want to know too much. There are ways to find out more, but actually, I'd rather not. I'd rather just get on with what we're doing and focus on that and perhaps use mystery shopping to actually improve our business and what our sales staff, etc., are up to. And I'd rather see it used that way in many instances, I think.
There's definitely a fundamental shift in the way we're doing business nowadays, isn't there? Because of that transparency. Because when you're tweeting to the world, in effect.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's very difficult to keep secrets. So you're listening to Essential Business Radio, and I'm here with Dee Blick and Natalie Page, both expert marketers, and I'm trying to get as much information out of them about marketing research. Now, one of the other things I think research is useful for, but correct me if I'm wrong, is within the business. So it's not just looking outside at your competitors or your potential customers or your existing customers, it's within the business. So Dee, will you talk us through how you would use research within the business?
You're right that it's like doing a market research survey of your customers. You have to look and think, what are the areas of the business in which we can make improvement, and what are the areas of the business in which we are excelling? So I've just done this recently with a client where I've been working with for several years, and we found out that in certain areas, in terms of delivery, he was underperforming, specifically at the new account opening stage. The research revealed that customers were not that happy. So immediately we had to look at reviewing that, making the communication process much better, having very nice letters sent out that explain clearly their payment terms. Other businesses that I've worked with may identify that the staff are lacking on the telephone in terms of the way in which they are greeting customers, and suddenly you've got a training need there that you have to pick up on. So it's really more about identifying, what did the research reveal by way of service, by way of products? Do we have to improve our products or our services as a consequence? Or is it simply a matter that the products and the services are more than good enough? We just have to improve the communications, because often a business will be doing just as well as a competitor in terms of delivery, and the research will reveal that, but their communications are selling themselves short. So it's really about sitting around the table and looking at, what did all this reveal? Where do we stay the same? Where do we make improvements? And in which area of the business do we have to make those improvements?
And that takes us back, Natalie, to what you were saying about the business owners you're working with having to park their ego.
Yes.
Because they've got to be prepared to hear what's being said and then implement those changes.
Absolutely. And that's sometimes the hardest thing to hear is news such as that. But also sometimes you might get feedback that you can't actually do anything about. Or it may be too much of a change to your business to actually implement it. So sometimes you can get information that you cannot act on, or it could inspire you to actually go a whole new different way in your business. If something isn't working, then you really might need to make drastic changes.
And you're doing it from a point of a clearer understanding of the wisdom of that.
You're informed, change. You're making an informed decision. You're not just guesswork. And that's what scares me a lot with business owners, when they spend a lot of money on when it's based on guesswork. And
or as you said earlier, asking their mum and their friends, who will always tell who will always tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah, they will. And you might want to go to actually somebody who you know will be a complete pain, but may give you that brilliant independent view on things.
You're listening to Essential Business Radio. If you're finding this show useful, why not browse through the other business topics on the Essential Business Radio player? So what I like to do also is to just get that last bit of information out of you, which is some tips and ideas, just for a few minutes now, of ways of using research, applying it to your business to transform your business. Dee, do you mind if we start with you?
Yeah, I was just thinking about a piece of research that I've just recently done with a client. This is a fantastic small business case study, because he was being assaulted in the media by a multi-million pound brand. He is not a multi-million pound brand. But what he did was he did a bit of market research by an independent market research company to find out the levels of loyalty of his existing customers in the face of this massive onslaught of this big global brand. Hey ho, the research revealed that satisfaction levels were at an all-time high, not just for his brand, but for the particular product that the competitor had been trying to steal market share from. It's a small family business. So what did we do with that? We took that research to the media. We got the most fantastic coverage free. We had the statistics emblazoned over all of his advertising. We got it out in press releases, low-cost sales letters, you name it. And he got, I think it was a 25% uplift in sales that following month. Now, that was as a direct consequence of the market research that we'd had to do, just to find out, are customers still loyal? Are they still preferring his flagship product over what this competitor was trying to whip out from underneath him? And that, to me, was one of the most inspirational outcomes of any campaign. I thought, flipping heck, it's a little family business and we're really holding our own. It's a global brand that we took on, and we won, and we're still winning, hands down. So that's a triumphant story of how you can do a small piece of research, can stretch through every aspect of the business. We got the sales guys on board. They all had newsletters telling them how great the research was and the statistics. They could go forth to all the stockists of his product. So that was a wonderful example of research at its fact. Research can deliver to the bottom line if you go and actually run with it.
And information is power. And in
Definitely.
That respect, it gave him the power and the confidence to be able to go and take
yes.
them on, didn't it? Natalie, what are your tips about research?
I think certainly keep it simple. You know, if you're stretched on budget, then just do what you can with what you've got. Try not to assume what people are going to say. Go out there and get the information. I mean, a client of mine did a typical thing. I suggested a possible product that we should maybe go and find for a particular market. He was like, oh no, that market doesn't want anything new. I know that market, not a chance. I said, okay, just let me call just 20 shops, let me just speak to them. Rang them, and each and every shop asked for the same product. So what did we do? We did a little bit more research, put something together, got it out there, and it's now one of their best sellers. And it's as simple as that. It's trying to park the ego, go out there and actually do some research.
Excellent. So if those tips from Dee Blick of The Marketing Gym and Natalie Page of Page Marketing didn't inspire you to go out and market, do your research, I don't know what will. Thank you both very much for coming on Essential Business Radio.